Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. We're taking your phone calls today. Lots of good information. We've got three doctors in the studio, and they'd love to talk with you. Dr. Samira Umat is here. Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Ken Pentland is here as well. Here's the phone number. It's 206-644-6006. We're going to stay right here in Seattle. We have Robert on the line. Good morning, Robert. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to mention a couple of articles I found, and then I have a question about your vitamin therapy.
Sure.
And the articles I think might be interesting are June 2023 Age and Aging magazine entitled New Horizons in Cellular Senescence for Clinicians. And it's a very good article. It's quite long. It has a fantastic bibliography reference section at the end of it that seems to include every specialized, you know, mag under the sun.
Sure.
But it explains a lot of things in a good level that is understandable for normal people like myself about senescence. And after previewing it, I mean, it seems to me that it, in some cases it may be better to use rapamycin to limit senescence over the cocktail of quercetin and the other thing. The next article I'd like to mention is called Computer Chip with Built-in Human Brain Tissue Gets Military Funding. I didn't realize how much this was going on, but they have, you know, electron microscope pictures of they put human brain tissue over electrodes, and then all that brain tissue fingers out into the electrodes. And the electrodes talk to the brain tissue, and the brain tissue talks to the electrodes. And I think this is the way it's going. And I did a quick search and found out that this has been going on for about 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
My question about vitamins is the vitamin therapy. I mean, how often do you do it? You say it's $199 for a suite, I mean for a vitamin injection. Does that include a suite of vitamins? Mainly, is that a lot of vitamins in the one injection? And lastly, what about if you're already taking vitamins? Is there a possibility of overdose? You suggest people would quit taking vitamins before doing the therapy? And once again, how often would that therapy be?
Wow, great questions, Robert.
And a lot of them.
Yeah, Dr. Pentland, let's hear what you have to say about the IV therapy.
Let's start with the vitamin therapy. So, you know, the things we're doing are generally water-soluble, right? So there's little risk of overdose there. Also, as far as frequency, it's kind of up to you, but something like monthly would be a good idea.
Okay.
And there may be like a package deal.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, sometimes people know that they don't drink enough water and they don't swallow enough vitamins on a regular basis and don't take enough nutrients in their diet. So for them, a regular frequency, like once a month, would be a good idea. Obviously, if there are medical contraindications, we will not do that, or we will use reduced volume when we push the IV fluids through. But we have to be very careful to avoid side effects, hence the amount of volume that we use. Obviously, there's a purpose, and so rehydration, therefore we are giving you more fluid volume as well. So that will determine the frequency. The cost is $199 for one therapy. But if you choose a series of treatments, we might be able to give you a package, and the price per therapy will go down on that. And then you can use it once a month, or you can use it over the period of 1 year. So you can call the clinic for more details on that. And right now, the water-soluble vitamins are vitamin B and C and magnesium. And so you don't have to stop what you're taking currently. And the other thing is, you know, people get viral illnesses where their internal demand increases, or other infections where their metabolic pathways are increased. So they need more nourishment at that time to help them recover. Or they've been under stress of any kind, either work-related or travel-related or anything else, which is posing more stress on the metabolic pathways of your body, so you would benefit from that. So you can come in for one treatment, you can come in for a series of treatment over a period of time, and you can buy a package.
None of our patients are stressed at all. I'm sure.
No, none of our patients are stressed.
And just to clarify for Robert, too, this is an IV therapy, not an injection, right?
IV injection. Yep.
Yep. Okay, so they put it in, and you're sitting there with your bag.
Yes.
It's an infusion.
Okay,
yes,
an infusion.
IV infusion.
Okay, just wanted to see what that was.
And then
multiple other questions. Sorry, did you have another question about this before we move on?
Is the $199 for one vitamin or several vitamins?
Multiple vitamins. It's a cocktail of vitamins.
Okay.
And
All right. And then your comments, which were more comments than questions, really, but they trigger comments I want to make in turn.
Right. Let's talk about the age and aging and the dasatinib, quercetin versus rapamycin.
Yeah, but I'm going to start with a little bit different. I'm going to start with the brain electronic connection, because this was first done at University of Utah, my alma mater, where they were working with people that had been born blind and were actually putting electronic sensors, connecting them to the visual pole of the brain, and allowing blind people to see for the first time.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, now, those first experiments were done 20-some years ago, and the resolution was not bad, but at least they were able to discern light from dark,
right,
which they had not seen before.
Sure.
And so they would see patches of light, areas of dark, and it allowed them to move around and have more mobility instead of traveling always in the dark by touch and memory. And that's come a long way. They're now reached the point that they can have artificial limbs.
That's right.
Connected to the motor centers in the brain, and by thinking can actually make the fingers and the hand and the elbow start to function.
That technology has come a long way.
Yeah.
When in my rehab days, when we did amputees and we were fitting them with prostheses, we had to train their muscles to do a certain action so that they can get the result. So when that limb is gone, what is left, the higher proximity level muscles had to be trained, and that then was translated into function distally.
Right.
And now that has changed.
And now they're going straight from brain
to
prosthesis. So that technology is galloping right along, and I can see some very legitimate medical uses. I am a little nervous about having your cell phone implanted right into your body. For one thing, my cell phone wears out and goes glitchy once in a while, and I don't want to have surgery on my brain to replace it. So, the surgery on my wallet is enough. Thank you very much. So I'm afraid Elon Musk and I part ways on some of his implant ideas, but,
You know what they say about Elon Musk, right?
No, I don't.
That he is the extraterrestrial trying to find his way back home.
He is the new Edison.
Oh, boy.
He's the 21st century Edison.
Yeah.
Incredibly brilliant man.
My gosh, so brilliant. You know, I mean, just to think about it, electric cars, his one company is worth more than all of the others put together.
Yeah.
And
but he's got the better car.
Yes.
It just does.
Yeah.
I mean, I drive a Tesla Plaid, and I love that 1,200 horsepower with total silence.
Oh.
You know? No. I mean, it takes off like a rocket ship. You can actually feel your internal organs moving up in your body if you step on it hard.
I know. Most everybody that has that car loves it. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah. Well,
I don't have it.
It's a titch pricey. Yeah. But yeah, and then, you know, the boring to make tunnels under cities to instead of on surface railroads to have, you know, basically partially vacuum tubed city to city connection. That one's not working out so well yet, but at least he's working on it. He beat the socks off NASA and Boeing and Aerodynamics. I mean, all of the rocket companies, including the federal government, he has revolutionized and now has reusable rockets, you know, that are far less expensive to use and far more efficient. He's done the satellite communications that you know, down in Ukraine is allowing the Ukraine military to communicate and to see where their enemies are at. He was one of the original PayPal people. He revolutionized.
Wasn't that one of his first
things?
His
first money.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy has got project after project after project after project. All of them revolutionized. Mm. So yeah.
Wow, and he just renamed Twitter as X. Yes.
Oh, did he?
Now, yes,
yeah,
yes.
He's getting rid of the bird.
So I wonder if the tweets.
You don't give anybody the bird anymore.
No. But I wonder if he's going to call the tweets.
Something else.
Twix.
I don't know what it's
going to be. With the X. I don't know.
But it's not going to be tweets. Anyway.
Nope. No tweets.
But that was a digression from the question, which was about the senescent cell therapies.
Mm-hmm.
This gentleman, if I understand your comment correctly, he is still on the air, isn't he?
Yep. Robert, we still got you right.
I'm here.
Okay, yeah. So, Robert, if I understood you right, you thought that perhaps the rapamycin would be better than the dasatinib-quercetin combination for getting rid of senescent cells. I've got a little different opinion. Now, I use both. I am on rapamycin and I have periodic senescent cell therapy. So I'm in one of those, you know, not only do I do them for my patients, I'm in a unique position to look at my own response to them. And I also look at the data. Rapamycin is fascinating in that it has extended the lifespan and the health span of every animal it's ever been tried on, from worms to people.
Wow.
Okay. Now, people, we don't have lifespan, but we have lifespan markers are improved. We haven't been doing it long enough to find out if it'll actually extend our lifespan. But we know it extends the lifespan in monkeys and dogs and mice and rats and, you know, I think there was one in pigs. So every animal that's been tried on, rapamycin extends lifespan. It extends cardiac function. Rapamycin has actually remodeled the hearts in only 10 weeks at very high doses in dogs. Now, the doses in humans would be far higher than anybody I know that is tolerating the drug. But they gave it to dogs for 10 weeks and actually got their ejection fraction in their hearts to improve significantly. It has dramatically improved my urinary function. You know, I've done, just because I'm 76 years old, my urine stream had been slowing. When I went on the tadalafil, it improved. But then over the years, it started slowing again. I raised the dose of the tadalafil, it improved. Finally started slowing again. I did this dasatinib therapy. It helped marginally, but not much. But then I went on the rapamycin and I peed like I did 20 years ago. So, you know, that's for me a big improvement. It affects mood. It affects memory. It impacts your skin, your bones, your heart. So I think rapamycin is incredibly beneficial medication for older people. We'll know in 10 years whether it's actually extending our lifespans or not. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to lifespan extension and health, dasatinib quercetin actually gave better numbers. The highest rapamycin in the animal studies is dose dependent. The higher the dose given, the longer the extension of the lifespan. But the very highest result they've ever gotten is a 20% extension of lifespan. Dasatinib quercetin in the animals gave a 36% increase in lifespan. So I'm hedging my bets. I'm using them both. Right. We got a break coming up, but to sit tight, and I'll chat with you about that just a little bit.
Oh, yes.
Longer,
okay. So, Robert, you hang on. And Leslie and Sue, we're going to get to your calls as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we can take your call as well at 206-644-6006. We'll be right back.
What you don't know, someday I'll be living in a big old city, and all you're ever gonna be is mean. Someday I'll be
big enough that you can't hit with me,
and all you're ever gonna be is mean.
Little Taylor Swift there for you.
Right.
You got a Swiftie.
Yeah.
All the Swifties are happy.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. She was in town, loved Seattle, and 72,000 people were there. If you were wondering, what's all the traffic?
Just incredible.
Yes.
I mean, I think people were warned about traffic, so everybody
was talking about it. And then the Mariners and Blue Jays were playing, too, so there was quite a bit going on.
That's right.
So, Dr. Mixon, you were going to finish up. We were talking with Robert on Leading Edge Medicine.
I did find a cure for mean when I was a kid.
You did?
In the eighth grade when I started growing a bit.
Oh, there you go.
At 6'4" and a little bit muscular.
Mm-hmm.
I found that, you know, punching them in the mouth kind of cured
that,
the mean.
That kind of, whoa, Jerry.
Anyway. they stopped saying mean things.
Oh, yes, they did, I bet.
Lack
as they looked
teeth
up to
kind
you.
Of had a component of that, but it's a different issue. Hard on your fist, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it hurts. They don't show you that in the movie.
No, it hurts.
Anyway.
Shake it off.
And go home and ice pack
it. Oh, that's another Taylor Swift song.
Anyway, so the best lifespan extension in the animal studies thus far is the dasatinib-quercetin combination. Okay, there's nothing has done a better job than that. The average extension lifespan with the sirolimus, rapamycin, is about 12 to 15%, and the very high dose studies where you get the most side effects got it up to about 20 some percent. So, you know, if I had to pick one or the other, I go with the longer lifespan one. But the effects of the sirolimus are also very widespread, and so I'm just saying, hey, why not both? You know, I don't need to do the dasatinib as often because the rapamycin slows the formation of senescent cells. But I have not found a study that shows it actually kills them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your immune system is killing senescent cells, but as we get older, it kills them slower and slower, and you form them faster. The rapamycin tends most effectively to slow the formation. And since they're forming slower, I'm using the dasatinib and quercetin less often. Okay. But I want them both. If one gives a 36% improvement, that's the one I want. Then if I can get another 5 or 10% from adding, because they're not going to be additive, you're not going to get, you know, 15% plus 36%. There'd be some marginal improvement probably. So I'm guesstimating 5 to 10%, maybe 8%. Still, that gets me up to a 40% improvement.
Mm.
And if the average American lifespan is 76 years and I can get another 40% on top of that.
Mm. But you said something very interesting a while ago also about a healthy 76-year-old. That lifespan is a little bit different.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, that's fascinating, too. The average American lifespan is 76.4 years right now. But if you make it to age 75 and you are in good general health, you have no discernible chronic diseases, you have a probability, more than 50% probability, that you will make it to 86. You'll get another 11 years.
Okay.
And if you can get to that 86 without any significant chronic diseases, you have a probability of making it to the mid-90s.
Wow.
Okay. So the trick is, take care of that first 75 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's never too late to start.
Well, if you're 78, it's too late.
It's too late to start. Okay, but
too late to make it to 75.
That's right. you've already done it.
That,
you know. All right. Okay, boy, Robert, that's so much good information for you. Is that helpful? Okay.
He's gone.
He's gone.
You know. Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Oh, okay. So the article actually, I don't want to worry anybody. It's like the COVID vaccine. I didn't take it. But I think they unnecessarily worry people about it. I don't think it's as bad as the panic seems to say. And similarly, in this article, it did mention that rapamycin could theoretically be better than the cocktail. The statement was rapamycin should not interfere with pathways controlling the cell cycle arrest component of cellular senescence, as this holds at least a theoretical risk of promoting the development of cancer. So yeah, it would be better to have a gallery test before I did the cocktail.
Well, it wouldn't hurt. But, you know, it depends on how far you're trying to suppress your senescent cells. You know, we do need a modest level of senescent cells. They are a natural function. The problem is that when you're a kid, when you're young, you don't form senescent cells nearly as fast, and your immune system is very robust, and you clear them in a matter of a day or two. By the time you are 60, you are making senescent cells 3-4 times faster, and you're keeping them around. It takes 2.5 weeks on average to clear any given senescent cell. So your total number of senescent cells is orders of magnitude higher in old age. Now, what we do with the dasatinib is it's calculated to reduce your number of senescent cells by about 70%. So we let you keep about 30% of your senescent cells. We don't try to suppress it to zero because you need it for some function, okay? So, yes, we would not use it in very, very high doses. But once more, you got to remember rapamycin almost always raises both blood sugar and cholesterol, which is why we don't use it in diabetics, okay? Because it makes a significant rise in both blood sugars and cholesterols. And so it's kind of a quandary. On the one hand, we are raising two factors that tend to shorten lifespan by using the rapamycin. On the other hand, the animal studies show that they do live longer, just not as long as the dasatinib does. So Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine, anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Second rule of medicine, the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job. You don't want to keep pounding with higher doses. Third rule, if you don't measure, you don't know. So we measure everything. Fourth rule, which I hate.
Uh-oh.
You can do everything right, and things will still go to hell. That's just life. So, hope we helped you, sir.
There you go. Robert, thank you so much for your call and your information. Great dialogue. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're back with Leslie that wants to talk about supplements. She's got a particular reason she's wanting to ask the doctors about that, and we're going to talk kidney stones with Sue in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and if you have a question for the doctors, we have room on our phone lines, 206-644-6006. We'll be back. Playing the hits today. Yeah, pretty much, right?
Pretty much, we try.
On Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Ken Pentland, Dr. Samira Umat, and we're looking at the mock-up of the cover of your new book, which is going to hit the bookshelves here in September, October?
December.
December, okay. So we're in time for Christmas.
Well, I'm doing it as a premium with a 90-minute public TV show that I just filmed week before last. And so they've asked me not to release the book until the TV show.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a good idea. Okay. Okay. They've got some marketing reasons for that. That's awesome.
Well, it's actually public TV wants people to donate to them
in order to get the book.
Get a copy of the book. If, you know, but I think they're asking for like a $180 donation. Mm-hmm. And then we give them a copy of my book. We give them a DVD. We let them stream some of things. I give them some exercise bands and that sort of thing. But they're saying, you know, if they can buy the book for $29.95 instead of a $180 donation to public TV, they don't want to lose any donations.
Okay. So. There we go. All right. Well, it looks wonderful. Cannot wait to see this in the bookstores and go, I know him. Oh, this is Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here today. We have all three doctors in the studio, Dr. Samira Umat, Dr. Ken Pentland, Dr. Jerry Mixon, and your phone calls. We're going to go to Bo, Washington right now. We have Leslie on the line. Thank you for your patience, Leslie.
Hello, Leslie.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning. What I'm calling about is my husband was just diagnosed with calcific tendinopathy and right shoulder. And I was told that when you develop calcium deposits like that, they stay forever and there's nothing that can be done about it. Is that true?
I'm not sure that it's forever. It's commonly, most often, it people don't change what they need to change. Calcium in a tendon, in a ligament or tendon, is the consequence of chronic inflammation. Okay, when you recurrently traumatize and have a high inflammatory process in a ligament or a tendon, your body infiltrates that tendon with calcium. And so, you know, that's whether it's in your tendons, whether it's in your blood vessels, any chronic inflammatory response can result.
Why does a calcium deposit in a tendon or a ligament?
I don't know why. I just know that the correlation is with inflammation. That's where people get they get X-rays of their foot and they're told they have bone spurs. Those are not really spurs sticking out from the bone. What that is where the ligament attaches to the bone. That chronic inflammatory change has laid down calcium in the ligament, and it looks like a spur, but it's actually following the track of the ligament.
What you said earlier is probably the right cause, which is repetitive use and trauma causing inflammation, and that inflammation then causes the deposition of calcium.
Right.
That's probably what initiates it and then causes why preferentially calcium.
Well, we know that in plaque in your arteries, for instance, you've got damage to LDL to cholesterol. That damaged LDL cholesterol is picked up by your phagocytes because the big white cells think that that's a foreign material now because it's no longer healthy cholesterol. It's carried under the intima and laid down along the wall of the artery, and it's a soft, basically pus-filled white cell. And over time, that plaque, that soft plaque, is then infiltrated with calcium to stabilize the plaque.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the plaque ruptures into the lumen of the artery, now you've had a heart attack or a stroke.
Mm.
So the calcium infiltration of the plaque in your artery is a means that the body is using to try to stabilize it and prevent you from dying. Now, that same process seems to be happening in the ligament. But my guess is it was designed for your blood vessels. But once your body has learned that inflammation means send me calcium, it does it wherever you find the inflammation.
You know, Jerry, actually, just want to mention one thing there about the calcification of the tendons. That's one of the applications we use for Viasure, actually.
Oh, well, good.
Right, because plantar fasciitis is basically calcification at the insertion of the plantar fascia.
Oh, so for rotator cuff tendon, if it is calcific, it...
Right. Mm. Yeah, because it helps reduce inflammation at the site, helps with protein synthesis, and can help repair the tissue. Mm.
So this new device that you're working with
Yep.
looks like it might help.
Musculoskeletal applications.
And we have been successful in Achilles tendonitis and piriformis syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the calcium itself not really causing the pain. It's the inflammation that's preventing the use of that or the tendon from working the way it's supposed to.
Well, calcium prevents things from being as flexible. Calcium is stiff. It's a mineral. All right.
Got it.
So you probably got an additive effect. You've got the chronic inflammation. You got the calcium deposition, which would stabilize it if it were a plaque, but it isn't. And now you're simply adding a stiffening agent, the
right.
mineral,
fair enough,
to the ligament.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is it's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
And so. The Viasure might be a reasonable thing to try to see if they could clear up both the inflammation and the calcium.
Hmm.
You know,
what is the Viasure? Is what it's called?
Well, the Viasure is a sound wave therapy.
It's a name of the device. The device is called Viasure. It's a specific device. There are many sound wave therapies, but the device we have is a unique one, and not everybody has this. So it's sound wave therapy for tendonitis, specifically rotator cuff and or calcific tendonitis.
Oh, interesting. So does it break up the calcium?
It can break up the calcium. It helps improve circulation to the area. It helps restore function.
Okay. Could I get the telephone number for your office so I can call you?
Absolutely. Here is that number, and we would be happy to talk to you about the Viasure. That's what you're asking about. Here's the number. It's 866-86-YOUNG. Okay, 866-86-YOUNG.
And so when you call, ask for the tendonitis and ask for Dr. Pentland, an appointment with Dr. Pentland.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't just say Viasure because that device is used for erectile dysfunction, for prostate enlargement, and for ligaments and tendons.
Yeah.
So you got to tell them what you want to eat.
Yep. Dr. Ken, that you were talking with on the radio, and that'll help us.
Okay. And where are you located? In Seattle?
Kirkland.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkland. Okay. Yep. I will do that. And I assume that there's no supplement on the market that would help.
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate the information. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, ma'am.
I think what we should say maybe it's not the calcific tendonitis, but tendonitis in general. Relief factor and might.
Yeah. Well, relief factor helps most inflammatory processes, but that's a slow, you know, you're talking about 3 weeks to a month to get relief with that. But if nothing else is working, and certainly it wouldn't hurt to use the relief factor with the Viasure.
Mm.
So, Ken, if you see this patient, you might consider that.
Yep, I'll recommend that.
All right, wonderful. Taking your calls, we have room for just a couple more at 206-644-6006. We're headed to Graham right now. Sue on the line. Good morning, Sue.
Hi. I went to a PA urologist recently, and she wanted me to have a CAT scan of my abdomen. The report shows that I have two kidney stones, which I already knew I had. But anyway, one of them measures 8 millimeter and the other 10 millimeter. I was called by her assistant who said that the stones should be removed by surgery. This is my only functioning kidney. And I'm just a little bit concerned about possible damage. My kidney,
yes.
Can you talk to me about?
Yeah, we can. We used to have to do surgery for those calyceal stones. From what you're describing, these are almost half an inch in diameter each, so they're pretty big stones, and they're sitting there in that calyce, the urine collecting system from the kidney. Let me digress for a moment. Why do you only have one functioning kidney? Let's go back to what's the underlying disease process that cost you function from the other kidney?
When I was 16 and a half, I ended up with preeclampsia, and it was getting worse. And so the doctors at the Navy Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia, decided that I should have intravenous injection of, I think it was chloromycetin at the time. That caused me to feel warm throughout my body. And then 2 weeks later, I had a lot of pain in my right side. I went back to the doctors, and they checked for kidney infection and found none. And I think what was happening with my kidney at that time is that my right kidney died.
So you probably had a vasospasm or an occlusion of the renal artery on that right side. Okay, so it doesn't sound like we have an active process that puts this other kidney in jeopardy, and that's that's what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a device now. It's a it is also a sound wave device. Hold on a second. This is not the old one where they used to just send it through your side in a water bath and try to break the thing up. This is a fascinating, very, very small diameter fiber that they run up through the bladder all the way up the ureter into that calyces. They put it right up against the stone, fire a pulse of energy directed only in the stone itself, and break the stone up into tiny, tiny, tiny pieces. And they can actually fragment these stones so effectively that they all just kind of drain right on down the ureter and out in the bladder, and you pee them out. That's a whole lot less traumatic than an open surgery of, you know, going in surgically and going through your flank and all the way down to the kidney. I mean, that's a big, big surgery with a lot of trauma and energy. So if this really needs to be removed, my first preference would be to talk to somebody about using the new sound energy fibers to break it up. But before I even got that far, the next question I would do, I want to go see a nephrologist or a really good invasive urologist and get an opinion from an MD as opposed to a PA. Okay. PA stands for physician's assistant. Okay. So this person has a 2-year degree beyond their bachelor's. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about the possibility of a major surgical procedure, I want an opinion from the highest ranking guy in the room. So go get a second or a third opinion and make sure that they really think these need to come out. And if they really do need to come out, you want the least invasive, least traumatic way of doing it on the market. And right now, I think that's the sound wave therapy.
Sound wave therapy. Okay, let me ask you another quick question. I know it's probably not going to be very quick. But May 3rd, I was on a statin.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to take it, but I was taking it. And May 3rd, I went outside to do some yard work. And I came inside and went to the bathroom. And I should have taken a picture with my cell phone camera, but I didn't think of that. I had brown urine in the toilet, and I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to myself, well, I just need to drink more. So I did, and I went back outside. Well, I came in, and same results when I went to the bathroom.
All right.
3 times. I had an appointment on that Friday. It was on a Wednesday, and I had an appointment on the Friday. And the doctor was supposed to talk to me about, the subject became rhabdomyolysis or whatever.
Rhabdomyolysis. Okay. So? Yeah,
exactly.
All right. I'm getting signals. We have to take a break. But when we get back, we'll talk to you a little bit about rhabdomyositis.
Okay, Sue, you stay right there. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine right here. A breaky heart there, Dr. Mixon. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Just a few minutes left of our show today, but answering Sue's question, she had that second question for you.
Well, what they were referring to is rhabdomyolysis, which is basically when muscle cells die and release the hemochromatin. Thank you. My tongue is not working today. Hemosiderin and hemochromatin into the bloodstream, and then your kidneys pick that up and excrete it as a dark brown compound. I don't hear anything that tells me you should have rhabdomyolysis except working out in the hot sun, but you'd have to be working pretty hard. I mean, that condition is something is happening to you and you're stressing a muscle so hard that the blood supply can't keep up and part of the muscle actually dies. And that's what ends up causing the brown urine.
Ah.
I have serious doubts that that's what happened just because what you're describing shouldn't do it. Yeah, statin is a possibility. Statins do have a documented incidence of rhabdomyolysis. It's not high. It's a small percentage. It's a fraction of 1%. But it happens. So I would lean more towards the statin than I did the going outside.
And I eventually I came inside and I sat down at the computer and I, you know, wanted to figure out what was going on. And I read that statins can be involved with causing this kind of condition.
They can. So in fact, it can be fatal.
I didn't want to take this drug anyway, so I stopped taking it. When I went to the doctor on Friday, she said, yes, I would agree. You need to stop taking the statin.
Yeah.
Yes. I think we're all in agreement on that.
Right.
Because rhabdomyolysis can be fatal. Yeah. It can kill people.
What was your dose of the statin?
I know. So the interesting thing is when you go back to February 24th, 2022, I had COVID pneumonia. I was in the hospital, Good Samaritan, in the ICU for 11 days and 3 days in addition in another room. Anyway, while there, I was put on Eliquis. Right after that, I was put on Eliquis because I had one atrial fibrillation event. My right arm felt so weak. I could hardly pick up a glass of water or anything else. Mm. And I mentioned that to my primary doctor when I got out of the hospital, that I think that there's a connection with taking Eliquis and this weakness in my arm. Oh, no, it couldn't possibly be that, he said. And he was adamant. Well, in their commercial on the radio, Eliquis even mentions muscle weakness.
Yes, they do.
So over time, the muscle in my forearm has atrophied. So now I have one arm that is smaller than the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'll give you another possibility for that, though.
Okay.
And that is the COVID itself. COVID infections cause blood clots. Microcirculation. It's not truly a pneumonia that you get with it. We used to think it was back when the infection was going, but we now know that most of what we thought was pneumonia was actually densities showing up on the x-ray because the tiny, tiny blood vessels around the lung that exchange the gas were actually clotting off. And so that increased blood clot can cause heart disease, can cause what it's kind of a pseudo pneumonia, but it's certainly a lung disease, but can also trigger strokes and neurological injuries. And so your weakness could have been from the COVID or it could have been from the Eliquis. From what I'm hearing, I can't sort it out.
Yeah, I ended up asserting, myself and saying to my doctor, I need to have some tests done and find out what's going on. So I had EMG. Am I saying that right?
Yes,
and
EMG,
another test on my arm.
Nerve conduction.
And, yes.
Yep. And found out that the reason my hand was hurting is because I had developed carpal tunnel. And I don't know, just, you know, still is a problem.
Okay.
Anyway,
the carpal tunnel shouldn't make the arm shrink. Carpal tunnel is just the median nerve right in the wrist. And so it's right where the wrist joins the hand.
Yep.
So that'll give you numb fingers, the thumb, index, and center finger, maybe half of the fourth finger. But it shouldn't involve the forearm. If the arm is involved, then there's something higher. Then it's got to be a brachial plexus, the nerves in your arm, in your armpit, in your neck, or in your head. So once more, I'm leaning more towards COVID itself.
Well, so one of the doctors wanted me to have an MRI of my cervical spine. And so I did, and there's no significant anything that they found from that. But back to the lung thing.
Yeah.
So it says here on this report, it says findings, lower chest, lung basis. There are, I can't even say these words. But it says, wait a minute, increased linear densities, architectural distortion, and may be related to scarring or interstitial lung disease.
Okay.
So they want me to have another CAT scan of my full lung area and see what's going on.
Well, and that's appropriate because the MRI says something bad is happening there, but doesn't tell us exactly what. Young lady,
right.
I apologize, but we are out of time. They're going to throw us off the air. We got 60 seconds left.
Yes.
But thank you for the call. And, you know, if you want to talk to us a little earlier in a show, give
call
us a buzz.
Again,
we're happy
Sue.
To chat with you about it.
All right. This is Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. We encourage you to call and make an appointment to come in for a free health analysis appointment, still free, just two tests, a blood test and an in-body test, which will give the doctors information about what's going on in your body and what you can do to get faster, get leaner, stronger, smarter, and as Dr. Mixon says, sexier. We need you to make that appointment today at 866-86-YOUNG. Or if you have any questions about some of the things we talk about on our show, 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your week. We'll be back next week on Leading Edge Medicine.